From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
As you might imagine, what happened on Saturday against LSU, specifically around the quarterback position, is continuing to get a lot of attention, not just necessarily around Dog Nation, but really all over the place here. And anywhere that SEC football is kind of being talked about, a lot is being said here about what's happening with the with Fromm and Fields and kind of everything going on with that. We'll obviously continue to react to that here on this program here as well, because I think that there is a bit of a narrative emerging here from some people in terms of pushback against those who say Justin Fields should have played. It makes no sense whatsoever why Fields wasn't in the game on Saturday. A couple of running plays, or I guess one rushing attempt and a couple of handoffs, is not enough for a Justin Fields on a day when the Georgia offense was sputtering as bad as it was against LSU. Well, you're starting to see what some people are going to say in terms of pushback to that. Let me give you an example here from the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday. I'm talking about SEC network analyst Greg McElroy, who's on there with Paul Feinbaum. And right out of the gate here in the interview with McElroy kind of comes in hot here with a pretty strong take on Fields. And really, McElroy, in the audio you're about to hear here, it's kind of interesting that McElroy doesn't really give himself a whole lot of wiggle room. There's not a lot of mitigation here. There's not a lot of equivocating here. McElroy flat out doesn't think that Justin Fields was ready for the spot he was in on Saturday. And I guess if you want to take McElroy at his word here, I guess you could also say that McElroy also doesn't think Fields is going to be ready two Saturdays from now against Florida. I don't know if McElroy's right or wrong, but this is certainly a strong take from the former Alabama quarterback, SEC network analyst, on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday. As a way of furthering our own conversation, take a listen to this.
I've watched Jake Fromm for 2 years now and have been very impressed by everything that he's done, and still feel quite strongly that he gives them the best chance to be successful. I really do. Because I went back and I studied every single throw that Justin Fields made, and I had a chance to do that. I had a little extra time last week. And I get a little crazy when it comes to quarterback play. I went back and I watched Justin Fields, and I watched him go through his progressions, and he's just a step late on just about every throw.
Okay.
It takes him just a half second too long before he cuts it loose. Now, when he does throw it, he's very accurate with the football, but he's not quite ready for prime time just yet. No. He's a great athlete, and he will have an opportunity at some point, whether it's in this season or in the spring, what have you, to compete and show that he's capable of handling that job. But based on the 7-game sample size that we have and all the plays and the throws and the decisions that he's made, he is not yet capable of running this team as efficiently as Jake Fromm is.
So let me first of all say this. I think McElroy's pretty good on TV, even though I don't really agree with almost really anything that he says, and some of the ways in which he goes about his business are not necessarily my favorite. But overall, McElroy's got a pretty good TV presence. I'm guessing he's probably a rising star in that industry. On this particular issue, though, I don't believe for one second that Greg McElroy is, locked in some dark room somewhere with, the old reel-to-reel film, and he's starting it, stopping it, and going back as if it's like the Zapruder film over and over again on Justin Fields. I just don't believe that's what he's doing here. I think that's good theater and good TV to talk that way. But ultimately, I don't believe that Greg McElroy is necessarily some film room junkie here. I think he's a TV analyst or a radio guest here. I don't believe he's breaking down Justin Fields' film. I just don't believe that. However, I don't think McElroy would say what he said on the Feinbaum show yesterday if he wasn't getting this from somewhere. This narrative is emerging from somewhere of just because he's a 5-star quarterback, just because we've seen other freshman quarterback do well as of late, don't be so quick to assume that Justin Fields is necessarily ready to step in that role and do that. That narrative is coming from somewhere. When McElroy says that on the Feinbaum show yesterday, none of these guys who work for ESPN or the SEC network, none of these guys want to look foolish, right? They're very careful about what they say. They talk to people who do know. They talk to, whether it be stat crunchers, people at practice, whatever. They get their stuff from somewhere. Otherwise, they run the risk of being left out on an island somewhere and ultimately embarrassed here. McElroy doesn't want to do that. So what he said about Fields yesterday, he was getting from somewhere, the notion that Fields is not ready. But now here's the question. Is that narrative of Fields not being ready really true? Or is it the kind of thing that's being put out there in the hopes that Fields will step up and do something over the course of the next couple of weeks to sort of open into a higher threshold at practice than he's been to before, to compete and achieve at a level and during practice he hasn't done before? Is this all some sort of setup to get him more ready than he's been right now? Honestly, we don't know. But there's also a sense in which we have to kind of take Greg McElroy at his word here that maybe Justin Fields just wasn't ready. And maybe, as McElroy said, that Jake Fromm really is still the best quarterback for Georgia, both an LSU game, as bad as that turned out, or maybe if it comes to leading victory to Florida, maybe Jake Fromm really will do that. I get that there's a pocket of Georgia fans that will have to see that with their own eyes to believe that, but there's an element with which I guess we almost have to take Greg McElroy at his word here and see where this goes next. I don't think these are static situations necessarily. I don't think what's true right now necessarily has to be true 2-3 weeks from now. I think you're going to see some growth and development with a lot of Georgia freshmen, maybe the freshman quarterback included. But Greg McElroy did not leave himself a lot of wiggle room with what he said there about Fields. Now, McElroy in this Paul Feinbaum interview also addressed another subject, and here is one that I think a lot of Georgia fans are going to agree. There's split decision, there's divisiveness among fans about quarterbacks right now, but the other point that McElroy makes yesterday, I don't think there's any debate or doubt about whatsoever, that the biggest issue for Georgia in the game on Saturday against LSU may not have been what Jake Fromm didn't do or what Justin Fields might have done had he replaced Fromm at some point. It's why Georgia abandoned a running game that seemed to be working with Elijah Holyfield, with DeAndre Swift. Why did Georgia go away from that for such long stretches? Greg McElroy touched on that too, and as I said, this is a subject upon which he's probably going to get more unanimity from Georgia fans. Here's a McElroy once again.
Well, it's always the quarterback's fault, right? Like, if you are winning, it's the quarterback's rolling, yep. Right? If yep. you're not playing well, the quarterback is clearly the reason why. And if you actually watch, I would take exception a little bit to the game plan that they rolled out there. Thought they abandoned the downhill rushing attack and got a little bit too perimeter heavy in the game. You got to force feed that, and that's who you are. So I thought they abandoned it just a little quick, and the situation in the game would dictate that when you're down that many points against a quality defense. So just a tough game for Georgia, just an average outcome, and it was kind of slipping away in that direction for a little while. But you shouldn't just blame the quarterback. The offensive line has a lot to do with it. The running game or the inefficiencies there have a lot to do with it as well.
Now, I think it's really interesting what McElroy says there, because it's almost a direct rebuttal to how Kirby Smart himself explained the decision to go away from Holyfield for such a long stretch. When he spoke post-game, his words very different than McElroy's here. And you know, when Chip Towers joined the show yesterday, it seemed like Chip was a little bit more in the camp of McElroy here of, yes, Georgia did go away from that. But Kirby Smart apparently doesn't seem to think so, or his way of describing this is just a little bit different. Let me remind you once again how Kirby viewed the play calling on Saturday, and apparently Kirby sees things a good bit different than a lot of us do. Here's a little bit of Kirby on why or why not we didn't see more from the running game.
I think that's every couch quarterback's. You can go back and say anything. I mean, what should you have done? Well, we should have scored more points. At the end of the day, we were trying to move the ball, trying to do things. I mean, we were running the ball effectively at times. You know, we just did not sustain drives. And we had a drought in the second quarter where we didn't get a whole lot going.
And let me let you hear one more from Kirby Smart here on the notion that maybe Georgia didn't depart from that running game as much as McElroy, me, you, some of us think. Here's a little more from Kirby.
We didn't go away from it. Actually, we went right back to it, and it didn't work. So when we were in four open sets and we were running the ball really well, and we drove down there, then we faked the field goal and didn't get it, we kind of stayed with that. The next drive, we went back to it. They changed some things up, and it wasn't working as well, so we went back to 12 personnel and ran the ball a couple times for 7-8 yards in that, and we thought in the big personnel we had a chance to hit some play actions, which we did hit some. But when we went back to the package that we just rolled the ball down the field with those guys running, it wasn't there. We weren't getting the same movement. They were making the ball bounce out. We didn't have as much production in it. But that's the first thing I was saying. Let's go back to what worked earlier.
Listen, I do truly believe that if Georgia had stuck with Holyfield more in the game on Saturday, had it stuck with DeAndre Swift, had it stayed committed to the run even when LSU was making defensive adjustments to try to stop it, I think the quarterback conversation would be a lot different on Saturday. You know, after the game would be a lot different than it actually ends up turning out to be. That doesn't mean the quarterback conversation is inconsequential, because Jake Fromm needs to play better than he played this past Saturday, and there is a natural curiosity about how Fields would have done had he gotten more opportunities. But I'm still not sure that quarterback is the number one reason why Georgia lost the game on Saturday. Unfortunately, it's a recipe of a lot of different issues. And the good news here is Georgia's got a couple weeks here, a lot of practice behind closed doors to get this stuff right and get back to its winning ways against Florida. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are presented by Marco's Pizza, and glad to have you. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, podcast form everywhere that podcasts can be found, including the world-famous DogNation.com. We're glad you found us today. Really appreciate Marco's Pizza for making it all possible. Why don't you say hello, Primo, tonight with two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. It's every store, every day. The Italian way. I mean, real, authentic Italian quality pizza. You know, the Giammarco family recipe that's using the sauce, those three cheeses blended, melted together on kind of a dreary day like this. It'll be overcast, I think, most of the day. No better way to kind of stay cooped up tonight and enjoy that with a little Marco's Pizza. Hope you enjoy it and really appreciate Marco's Pizza for being a part of our program here today. We'll get Jeff's intel later on. One of the things that we're going to talk to Jeff a lot about is the freshman report that he's written at DogNation.com. And, you know, one of the things that Jeff and I have talked about a lot off the air, and some of this is going to bleed on to the air, are some of those freshmen. You've heard me speak about this too. Some of those freshmen that have been close to playing a little bit, but could be much bigger contributors for Georgia before the season's done. When you see some of the issues that emerged for Georgia on Saturday, apart from the quarterback, by the way, especially on defense, there is just, I think, some hope among Georgia fans that some of the young players can plug some holes here before the season's done. In fact, before we bring on Jeff, let me make that the subject as well. As we go around the doghouse here on Tuesdays, brought to you by Brasstown Valley Resort in a beautiful Towns County, Georgia, right there on the banks of Lake Chattoog. Let's go around the doghouse here and focus on the Georgia defense for a moment. Because as somebody said in our comment section yesterday, and I can't remember if it was on Facebook or YouTube, that we probably haven't talked enough about the Georgia defense. Quarterbacks are just such a magnet for attention. A lot of our eyes and ears and mouths are going to be drawn towards discussing those quarterbacks. But really, you know, one of the main reasons why Georgia lost the game on Saturday is because of the 275 yards. I think that was what the number was. The 275 yards that Georgia gave up on the ground. Some big plays for Joe Burrow, who, you know, let's face it, is a better quarterback than LSU's probably had, but this is still not an all-conference level quarterback here. But Georgia at times kind of made him look that way on a Saturday, and Kirby Smart was pretty candid after the game this past weekend about what Georgia did not get done defensively. A lot of that was on the ground with the rushing attack here, and here is Kirby Smart not mincing words when he talked about that Georgia defense as we go around the doghouse.
Well, they broke tackles for a lot of them, and a couple of them were third and shorts where we took a chance to stop them, and they spit out on us. Some of them we missed tackles on, and then some of them they made good throws and catches. You know, they did a good job of mixing up. When people go fastball and they go quick on you, hurry up, a lot of times they just run the ball. Well, they took shots, you know, and they took shots outside to good wideouts, and what happens is you're not as effective rushing when they block with seven guys. So you can't get pressure when they go fast and they block seven guys. They're just throwing the ball outside one-on-one. We weren't able to cover better because we had to stop the run, and we weren't stopping the run well. When you don't stop the run well, guys, it makes it hard to do anything, and that's where we were today. We had to expose and put our corners out a lot.
So let me be really candid about something, speaking here as a fan. Y'all know I'm a fan of the Georgia Bulldogs. I got the Georgia G on my shirt right now, for those of you watching the show on video. You know I'm a fan here, and speaking as a fan, there's an element of the defensive concerns for me right now that are more significant than the offensive concerns. Because you can look at the offense and say, oh, well, if you had just called this play instead of that play, you might have been more successful. I mean, hey, there's a chance we're not right, but that's at least the narrative that can emerge here. Oh, if you just ran these kinds of plays instead of those kinds of plays, everything would have been fine. Everything would have worked out better. But what do you do on defense right now? I mean, how do you step up and stop the run better when you really haven't done that very well all season long? And LSU seemingly knew that. That's one of the reasons why it was looking to go fast on those short yardage plays, because it knew it could just sort of bust up the middle and get what it needed to convert the chains there. What do you do about that? As I've said a million times before, when it comes to improved performance, about the only thing that's a guarantee to work oftentimes is improved personnel. And where is that personnel going to come from? It just seems like for a Georgia fan who's looking to see less rushing yards for the opponent, the only thing that you can hope for is that some of these freshmen who played some get a chance to play more and really prove to be worthy of that playing time, maybe especially at the linebacker position. As Jeff Sintel mentioned, guys like Quay Walker, guys like Channing Tindall, Tindall, who we've seen climbing the stat sheet a bit as of late, that may be the recipe here. There were far too many tackles by defensive secondary players for Georgia on Saturday, not nearly enough from the front seven. It's going to take better personnel, I think, to fix that, and some of that is maybe freshmen emerging here over the rest of October and the month of November. Those are big questions to answer as we head towards Florida, and obviously I'm glad we've got guys like Jeff Sintel focusing in on that right now. Before we bring on Jeff, let me remind you that here on Tuesdays around the Doghouse is brought to you by our friends at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, Towns County, Georgia. Beautiful Lake Chattoog. You see on the screen right there, they got the spa where you can get the massage. You got the horseback stables. You can go enjoy the trails there. Championship golf as well. And right now, many of you I know get in the Doghouse this time of year because of how much football you watch. Well, if you want to get out of the Doghouse, we're teaming up with Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa to help you do that right now with our Get Out of the Doghouse giveaway. One lucky winner is going to receive a 4-day, 3-night trip for two to Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, which includes spa treatments, stable trail rides, two rounds of golf with a car, and so much more. Here's the website you need to go to. And if you're listening to the show right now, let me make sure you get this. It's getoutofthedoghouse.com. Dog, of course, spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G. Getoutofthedoghouse.com. Please go to that website. And don't forget, this month, bye week this Saturday, a couple of trips away from Athens the rest of the month, it's also a great time to get over to Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa for the beautiful fall season as the leaves start to fall. Make sure you check that out. Right there in beautiful Towns County on the banks of Lake Chattoog, it's Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. Great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. Hope you enjoy Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insight.
All right, it's time for a Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. We speak to Jeff Sintel here on this Tuesday on the program. And Jeff, before we kind of get into your freshman report, and I talked a lot about some of the defensive freshmen before you join us on the show today, let me hit this from a recruiting standpoint about what happened against LSU on Saturday. Obviously, Georgia is kind of a unique position this year in the fact that it has a couple of commits from the state of Louisiana. It's talked to some other recruits from that state. It's battling over a linebacker, N'Kobe Dean, that is going to take an official visit to LSU, despite the fact that he doesn't live in Louisiana. How does this thing impact Georgia recruiting to go out and lose and kind of lose badly to LSU, specifically for the guy like John Emery Jr., who was, I guess, reported to have been there on a Saturday night? How does this impact Georgia recruiting, Emery in particular, the UGA commit, Louisiana resident here? What impact does an LSU loss have on him, the rest of the guys that are choosing between these two schools right now?
Oh, Brandon, I'm sorry, man. I can't deliver any bad or awful news on that front today. It's not like, I mean, these recruits are kind of like you in the French Quarter, Brandon. Like, there were people walking around with Domino's pizza boxes, and you stayed strong, my friend, to the Marco's pizza brand. Now, you weren't going to have any of that Domino's pizza. And I think, man, you know, one recruit, one visit, it doesn't really shape a recruiting. I know that, you know, I've spoken to the Emery family, and they told me that that one game is not going to be enough to sway John. Of course, he's going to be heavily recruited. But the one thing about John Emery, as you guys will read about this week on DogNation.com, is he doesn't really like the recruiting process. He likes being almost done. He doesn't like the structure of how during the season he would have to go take an official visit or an unofficial visit to a faraway locale. You mentioned N'Kobe Dean. N'Kobe Dean had, the Georgia visit was on for the weekend of the Vanderbilt game. Then it was off. Then an initial report came out that he was coming for the Auburn game. That report could not be confirmed. I could not confirm that report through my sources until yesterday. I think early yesterday morning, I got word that there is an official visit planned for the Auburn weekend with N'Kobe Dean for that weekend. And he's also got an official visit to Auburn planned for the weekend we've been talking about for a while. I think that's the Liberty game that weekend. But, you know, Micaiah Tung's another interesting guy right there. He told me that he was trying to get to that LSU game, but LSU did not kind of accept his ticket request. So he wasn't, I don't think, unless he just came in as a fan, he wasn't able to make it to that game. So I guess the main thing there, you wanted to know about, you know, people were worrying about Emory. I guess it doesn't work that way, especially with a lot of guys. There's no beacon or a call for Owen Papo to flip to Tennessee after Auburn just got that thing. And, you know, after Georgia did what it did to DJ Daniel, I mean, after Georgia did what it did to South Carolina, there was no flip there with DJ Daniel as well. A lot of these guys look at the context of their decision and base it off a lot more than just one football game.
Let's talk about Justin Fields for a second. This is a guy that you know well from the recruiting process. You know, also know Georgia starter Jake Fromm from the recruiting process very well also. You're with us for our Northside Hospital postgame show on Saturday. You know the conversation being had around Georgia fans right here. I played some audio before you joined us of SEC Network analyst Greg McElroy, who says that Justin Fields is not ready for prime time. And that's why he didn't play on Saturday versus LSU. But, Jeff, you've heard from enough Georgia fans who are not going to take McElroy at his word on that. They're not even going to take Kirby Smart necessarily at face value on that, given the fact that Kirby would have told us before the start of the 2016 season that Grayson Lambert was better than Jacob Eason, and yet the moment Eason played, he was the better of the two. Same way last year with Fromm and Eason. Fromm quickly proved that he was better than Eason once he got a chance to go in. We've seen Kirby Smart at times orchestrate some quarterback competitions that haven't always played out on the field like we were told they were playing out necessarily at practice. And that creates, I think, some skepticism in the minds of some Georgia fans here about what truly is going on at a quarterback. How would you respond to a lot of the Georgia fans who wanted to see more of Justin Fields on Saturday?
Yeah, I guess it's just people are just ready to watch a different, just change the channel and see what else is there. It's that, you know, grass is always greener type stuff. I think, you know, you dabbled into an interesting point that I wanted to flesh out there for the audience, Brandon, is, you know, this staff, the Georgia staff, has said that when a freshman's ready to play, they will play. They will get on the field. I think the Lambert and Eason comparison works pretty well there because you saw Lambert, you could describe him as the incumbent starter, a guy that had some success against conference foes, and Georgia had won a lot of ball games. Not because of him, but definitely not in spite of him. And then you have Alex Fromm, who, let's face it, he's put together some of the best performances through a Georgia quarterback's first 20 games as a starter as anybody has. And the fact that they played Eason so quickly in that game against North Carolina showed that those guys were close, and it showed that Jacob Eason had almost as good of a role and could move the team almost as effectively as Grayson Lambert was going to do, because you wanted to invest in the young passer and you wanted to invest in a guy that was only going to get better from there. I think you just see, and this is something we had to, I think, repeat ourselves a couple of times with Fromm and Fields right now. I do feel if Fields was ready to play and he gave Georgia just as good of a chance as Jake Fromm to win, you would have seen a lot more of him in that game. The big glaring stats right now is they're playing Justin Fields. They're giving him opportunities to get his feet wet. But it's not throwing the ball around a lot, especially against conference opponents. Most of those glowing 18 out of 25 stats that came against Austin Peay in Middle Tennessee, and he was only 3 of 6 against Vanderbilt. So I just think everybody's wanting to hurry up. I think maybe the better comparison to some early days recent history of Georgia football is I think it would be very interesting to see. Everybody remembers that time when I think it was Sony Michel and Nick Chubb came to Jim Chaney I think that was the last year, and they said, let's run the ball more. We need to run the ball more. And that was timed right around the Florida game as well. I think that might be the emphasis when people start talking about changes. I know everybody wants to look at Fields in the quarterback spot, but I can click off a lot of names. Jordan Davis, Channing Tindall, Quay Walker. How close are those guys to breaking through and also helping Georgia as well? I think those are all very big questions. And those guys might all be a little bit closer to the starter or the first team or second team spot than maybe Fields is to Fromm right now.
And I want to talk to you about a lot of those defensive names in just a moment, but let me follow up on this. And you're going to hate this question, but I'm going to ask it to you anyway because it's something that's been suggested to me. When you see a true freshman Trevor Lawrence good enough to be Clemson's hope to get back to the college football playoff, when you see a true freshman Tua Tagovailoa a year ago be the savior that came in and rescued Alabama after Jalen Hurts faltered, apart from whatever the evaluation of Jake Fromm is right now, Is Justin Fields then, are we to assume, behind Lawrence and Tagovailoa as a freshman quarterback prospect here? If they are ready to do something, the Fields, at least according to SEC Network analysts and maybe the Georgia coaches here, is not ready to do? Or we should assume that as a five-star quarterback, Fields is behind those other prospects then?
Yeah, I think that maybe there are things in that comparison that are apples to apples, and then there are things that are maybe apples to nectarines a little bit there. Because a lot of those guys, Jalen Hurts, Kelly Bryant, they didn't have the advanced understanding of the offense or the passing game as Jake Fromm does in this Justin Fields scenario. I mean, a lot of people are going to criticize Jake. Yes, he had one of his worst performances as a Georgia Bulldog. Maybe he held the ball too long, took some bad sacks, all that. But a lot of times what Jake Fromm does is he gets guys lined up. He gets people in the right position. He aligns the play pre-snap. He can count defenders. And he can check the play to whichever side the run fits. It's a lot better. Those are a lot of things that never show up on the stat sheet for Georgia. A lot of things that a lot of those gaudy stats from Chubb and Michelle last year were propelled by a good check or a good pre-snap read at the line by Fromm. Of course, nobody wants to get into that. Everybody knows that he is one of the most heralded recruits, and he makes Georgia better. And I think the better line of thinking, if someone wants to really rally the Fields momentum, is that you don't really have to do all those things with a dual-threat quarterback of Justin Fields' nature in there. I mean, you're gonna play Georgia differently in the box. You're going to probably try to spy Fields a lot. You're going to be a lot more careful with those RPOs. And then the other thing with Justin Fields is he's going to be able to stretch the field even better than Jake Fromm does at times. Jake Fromm throws a very nice deep ball, but I think anybody that's covered these guys and seen these guys on the recruiting trail and seen what their arms can do, they would say that Justin Fields has the overall stronger arm. But I think it comes down to the way Georgia is fundamentally wired as a program. They want to play defense. They want to run the ball. They want to lean on an opponent, and they want to wear them down. And they want to come with play action, and they want to stretch the field vertically. So all of those things requires a quarterback who protects the football and protects the possession, protects every possession. And right now, the thought, I'm guessing here, but the thought of Fields on the game in a live situation, it's probably a more hazardous situation with ball security and protecting those possessions than it is with Jake Fromm.
All right, let me do a little defensive stuff here. And once again, this kind of all coming from the freshman report that you've written at DogNation.com. It's been after every game this year. It's one of the great staples at DogNation.com right now. I want to invite folks to check that out. And I'll also remind people that this is the Marlowe's Tavern tell-all here on a Dog Nation Daily. And if you want to know about great events taking place in the Marlowe's closest to you, including when we're going to be back at Marlowe's again, huge announcement coming up, so stay tuned for that, about why next week's event for our Dog Nation big game preview, looking into the cocktail party, it's going to be maybe our biggest Marlowe's event of the season. That's coming up later on, so make sure you listen for that, how you can be a part of that great event. A great time there with Marlowe's next week. And of course, to find out more about Marlowe's, text the word Marlowe's, M-A-R-L-O-W-S, no apostrophe, just M-A-R-L-O-W-S to 24242, and you can become a Marlowe's Tavern insider. You'll get special offers, special information on big-time events, and you will really be glad you made that decision. All right, let me talk about Tyson Campbell here first, Jeff, because the freshman quarterback get a little criticism coming off what happened against LSU, much like the South Carolina game where he got beat for a couple of touchdowns. Campbell got beat for a couple big throws on Saturday, ironically, by other freshmen a lot of times from the LSU core here. As one of our commenters mentioned yesterday, it's probably a little easier to be a freshman wide receiver than a freshman cornerback. I don't dispute that. I think that's probably true. And yet, overall, my line of thought on Campbell doesn't really change here. I think that Georgia needs Campbell to be an experienced five-star next year. The only way you get that's by playing him right now. There's no doubt in my mind he's still Georgia's best option at cornerback opposite DeAndre Baker. I'm going to take my lumps here. I've taken them a few times in the South Carolina game. It didn't hurt my team in terms of a win against LSU. Probably did. And yet this is the agreement that I'm willing to make here. Don't like seeing Tyson Campbell get beat, but I have no doubt he's the best option and no doubt he's going to be better in the long haul for the experience he's getting right now. What did you make of Campbell out there on Saturday in Baton Rouge?
Yeah, so first of all, he's going up against elite talent, especially big talent. LSU's receivers, in my mind, are a step or two higher than what Georgia has. especially in terms of the big-bodied 6'2 and up type receiver. The recruiting rankings say that, and I think the on-field, the way they play, says that as well. I think here's the scary thought maybe for Georgia fans, and I don't know if scary is overusing it a little bit, but next year, it's clearly the front-runner to be Georgia's lockdown number one cornerback next year. That's going to be Tyson Campbell, so that guy needs to learn. He needs to be baptized by fire in the SEC, and I think right now, over the remaining four, five, six games of the season, whatever Georgia has, I think that definitely Tyson Campbell's next six games he plays this year, I think he'll be a better cornerback than Georgia finished last year, opposite DeAndre Baker in 2017 on that great playoff run that the program went on to. I think Tyson is a guy that's going to match up very well, and it's a guy that's going to have to learn a lot and have to get a little bit better, especially. I think nothing teaches a team like a loss, especially a young player likes some bad film, because that nobody likes getting beat. Nobody likes getting burned. I know cornerbacks are supposed to have a very short memory, but, I mean, Tyson Campbell, going back to his high school timeline, not used to that a lot, not used to giving up touchdowns, not used to giving up a lot of big plays, but that's the deeper level he's getting into here in college football. And I think his growth process is really good, and I think you point back to things. It's a lot easier for a young man at corner to play than a guy that's supposed to shepherd the whole offense at different positions, like the quarterback position with Justin Fields, and even like this really impressive flip-flopping that Cade Mays has done so far so well on the offensive line. Again, Georgia, I think when you have a young line like the Bulldogs are right now, I think it really sets up well for young players to fire off the ball and mash guys. I think the harder discipline to get used to, especially against some elite rushers, like those that can break out those, you know, ninja-type spin moves, the one that got the very impressive Andrew Thomas against LSU, it's a lot harder for them to pick those things up on the fly in the SEC.
So, Marlon,
I just look, Brandon, at a lot of this. I just look at a lot of these things, Brandon, and it's my last point, is it's investing into the future of Georgia football.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It's our Marlo Stavern tell-all here on Dog Nation Daily with Jeff Sintel. And along the lines of investing in Georgia's future, let's talk more about some of those defensive guys, because obviously the defensive performance on Saturday wasn't good enough. Too many rushing yards allowed, too many missed tackles. Kirby Smart's talked about that. The one point I've made emphatically over and over here on our program is the only surefire way to improve performance is to improve personnel. For Georgia right now, that means some freshmen who are in a limited role getting more opportunities to do that, proving they are ready at practice to kind of step in and do that. And you wrote about that this week. You know, we're seeing Brenton Cox on the field a lot, but not necessarily a lot in the stat sheet. We haven't necessarily heard a ton from, like, say, Quay Walker, Channing Tindall, although at least in Tindall's case, I know he's out there a good bit. Jeff, if Georgia's going to be a defense close at the end of the season to what it was last December, these freshmen may be the only hope here. I mean, Georgia is just once again in a position where it has to look to a freshman to come in and save the day here at some point in time. I think Georgia fans hope that's no longer the case. But if Georgia's going to lock things down in the front seven, it's going to be 18-year-olds or, you know, soon to be 19-years-old who are going to be asked to do that here. That's not the position you want to be in. But if Georgia doesn't get some major contributions from freshmen, it's going to the Citrus Bowl or something like that, I'm afraid.
Well, I wouldn't go to the Citrus Bowl, but
you know what I mean.
Yeah. Here's what the reality is. You got to look at it, and this is stone cold logic. There are really only three Georgia freshmen that you would label as a key contributor right now. That's Cade Mays, that's Tyson Campbell, and that's Jake Cremata. Those are the guys that have started a lot, started more than a handful of games. Cremata and Tyson Campbell have started every game. I think for this team to move forward, much like that infusion last year of Ben Cleveland, how it changed Georgia coming off that Auburn game when they were physically handled by both lines of scrimmage by the Tigers. I think there's got to be a freshman. And I'm sure the coaching staff, or maybe Kirby Smart, might even say sometime very soon that these guys, maybe after the cocktail party, are no longer freshmen in the SEC. They've already been to both Columbias. They've already been to Death Valley. And then by the time they get out of Everbank Stadium, I don't think they should be considered, especially since they're playing in every game. There's 10 of those freshmen that have done that so far for Georgia. I don't think they should be considered freshmen anymore. So I think there's a few guys, and I'm going to trot out a handful of names. Is it Trey Hill? Is it Channing Tindall? Is it Quay Walker? Is it Brenton Cox? I think one of those guys, at least one of those guys, has to step forward and really make a charge that they can really put together some key minutes and some key reps, because this bye week affords the ability to say, all right, let's try him out here. Let's see how much he's learned. Let's see how close he's gotten to where we're at with, you know, at the inside linebacker spot. With, you know, Monty Rice to me is the only one that seems like a higher echelon SEC type linebacker inside for Georgia.
Yeah.
Natrez Patrick has all the physicality. He has all the experience in the world, but I don't see Georgia getting remarkably better or playing remarkably better inside against an elite team with what a lot of those guys have to offer. Talk about Juwan Taylor. I do see some good things out of Tay Crowder, especially that type of space, that coverage, that hybrid linebacker that can get on a route and try to smother a guy. But, you know, everybody's waiting, and it almost seems like inevitability. With a guy like Channing Tindall, the way he plays and the way he goes sideline to sideline, the same thing can be said for Quay Walker. The light is going to come on for those guys. It's just a matter of when that will come on for that guy. Same thing for Brenton Cox, maybe even an Otis Reese as well. There are a lot of guys that are just, their time to bubble up and play great ball for Georgia is going to be here sooner than you think.
Boy, I think that's an exciting thing to think about, Jeff. Let me squeeze in one more thing before we let you go, and it's also about a freshman. It's on the other side of the ball. It's another guy that you kind of wrote about a little bit. And, you know, look, there are plenty of people who understand the X's and O's of football a lot better than I do, but the best I can tell, it seems like Dave Aranda made some defensive adjustments on Saturday to take away the middle of the field, the kind of stuff that Elijah Holyfield had been exploiting, to a certain extent DeAndre Swift, and Georgia then felt like it couldn't keep doing that anymore because of the new look defensively that Aranda had shown to Jim Chaney there, which makes me think, you know, late in the game when Georgia brings in Harry and runs the jet sweep with Mecole Hardman, boy, that would have been a great spot to see James Cook trying to run the ball outside. We know his speed. He's obviously more of a true running back than a guy like Hardman would have been. You know, is that a guy that can give Georgia the extra dimension with the outside run that makes defensive coordinators a little less tempted to kind of pack the inside to take away Holyfield there? Does the threat of James Cook open up something? You know, does Cook, you know, is he going to grow into a greater role here before this season's done?
Yeah, that's a guy that's, I think tempted is a good word, Brandon, that describes my thought on James Cook right now. And let me just allow you to see how I leveled that out a little bit. Number one, I don't think the Georgia running backs, I think when Georgia lost Zamir White for the season, I think the Bulldog offensive attack lost a very sharp tooth for what it could have been in 2018, because Zamir can run like everybody, but he's also 220, 225. With rare, special, innate ability. I'm talking about Leonard Fournette-type stuff. I'm talking about Adrian Peterson-type stuff. I'm talking about rare, special, innate ability. So right away, Georgia's running back core was going to be taken down a notch. And I think about James Cook a lot, especially when I see some of the struggles that DeAndre Swift is going through. And I don't just mean the hamstring or the, you know, where he's at with his burst and that explosion. He flashed a lot in 2017. Number one, you got to give the young man a lot of credit for rolling out there when perhaps he's not at his best. But also, I remember a time when DeAndre Swift was being recruited when he was the number one all-purpose back in the country. And he was the type of guy that initially, before he kept growing, a lot of analysts saw his size, you know, 5'9 or so, about 2'10 or so, and they thought all-purpose back, third down back, that type of Warrick Dunn type back. But then he kept getting better. He showed he could run between the tackles. And to me, I don't know whether there's kryptonite in the ball or whatever, but DeAndre Swift is the type of talent that he thinks Sundays are his future, and rightfully so. And when he gets his hands on a ball, he realizes that he should catch that ball because he's that type of talent and that type of athlete, and that's how hard he works to be great. So every time I see him struggle, I start thinking, what about James Cook there? What about him being that guy that's in to get checkdowns? But you got to remember football. And you got to remember the total package to get on the field at Georgia. That's pass protection. That's picking up a lot of things. And that's the number one thing a young back like James Cook will struggle with. And then you make the point about why wasn't James Cook in there instead of Brian Harrien late in that game. And the only thing that I think happens here is, besides Harrien being a very tough runner who pops as many tackles as any Georgia running back this season from what I've seen, is remember how Harrien sparked the team late in that Tennessee drive?
Sure.
How he kept making chains moving tackles and everything else like that. I think Brian Herring was the guy because there was such a quick recall from the play callers and, you know, the guys that handle the minutes on the Georgia sideline. Everybody remembers how well Brian Herring helped close out Tennessee down the stretch with those highlight carries and those gut-busting, those effort carries he made against the Vols. And I think that's what got Brian Herring back into that spot against LSU, because he's already shown he could do things like that against an SEC defense late in the game.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate your time here on our Dog Nation Daily with our Marlowe's Tavern Tell-All. Really good stuff. I know you've got a lot coming this week at DogNation.com from some of your trips around Louisiana. We'll look forward to reading more about Mekhi Tongue and John Emery Jr. and that next generation of Georgia athlete here that might prevent a loss like this in the future when they get on the field for the Dogs. Thanks for being here on the program today. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow afternoon for Before the Hedges, 3 p.m. back at our normal time after last week's coverage of the Lewisine commitment. I'll look forward to talk to you more about that and everything else tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern time for Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger.
Yeah, Brandon, and a quick one thing I want to say thank you to everybody. I know the result wasn't great for the Dog Nation invasion, but the outpouring of the fan base of this team we cover never ceases to amaze me. Thanks to everybody that shouted while we're walking around. And you make, you know, a humble little reporter like myself feel like I've got a pretty good job sometimes. And especially that gentleman I met in the Nashville airport from India, he said he flew all the way in to be there for that game, Boldface and Talisade. And he just, the interest a guy like that from India is a daily conduit for Georgia information and Georgia talk through this program. The effect that he said we have on his day-to-day life out there in India, that's really humbling, and I'm just glad that we get a job and our occupation allows us the ability to do that.
Well said, Jeff. We appreciate your time. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, you know, Jeff brings up a really good point. You know, I promise you at some point this week, one of the things we are going to do is look back on just how much fun Dog Nation Invasion was, and the folks who made it possible, our friends from Marlowe's Tavern, we were just talking about them, Kroger as well, R.S. Andrews, you hear me talking about Dari and those folks all the time, Skyland Brookhaven. It was a great, great time. Just a really, really fun weekend. We're going to celebrate that and look back on a lot of that at some point in time. We're going to do that, but obviously for now, the chief concern is what's going on there with the team and you know, kind of how Georgia gets better moving on. And so before we move into our SEC through, I do want to spend a couple of minutes reacting to something that Jeff Sintel said. I knew it was going to be a provocative conversation with Jeff today because he and I have talked about a lot of this stuff off air. We drove back from Baton Rouge to New Orleans on Saturday night, he, the two of us and Connor Riley, and you know, we were, you know, going at a lot of this stuff at that time, so I knew he would have a lot to say today. And as we were doing the interview with Jeff, somebody put in the comment section, I think it was on our Facebook comment section, well, why is it okay for Tyson Campbell to get experience on the job as a freshman, but not okay for Justin Fields? I think if you really think about that, you understand the difference between Campbell and Fields here. Fields is sitting partially because the guy that's the starter last year was an all-SEC caliber quarterback. You know, second in the SEC yards per attempt. You know, among the you know, top 20 in the country in that metric a year ago was the quarterback that led Georgia to a college football playoff. If there was a player of that caliber at cornerback for Georgia right now, opposite DeAndre Baker, then Tyson Campbell probably wouldn't be starting. There wasn't, so Campbell's getting the experience. He's going to be better in the long run for it. So, you know, the situation at quarterback's just different here. And that's why I would encourage Georgia fans, even the ones who want to see more of Justin Fields, to not count out Jake Fromm here. That this two-week period of time between the debacle against LSU and what Georgia's going to do against Florida two Saturdays from now is not just a time for Justin Fields to emerge at practice. It's also potentially a time for Jake Fromm to say, you know what, let me go out and show my doubters what I'm truly capable of doing. Now, no one's going to deny that Fromm played a bad game on Saturday against LSU. I think you can point to a lot of things that he would readily admit he's got to do a better job of. He missed some wide-open receivers. He took some sacks when he shouldn't have. And yet, you know, one game is not going to tell the story of anyone's Georgia career here. So let's not be too quick to write off Jake Fromm, even on the heels of a very bad game. And then one more quick point, if you don't mind. I think that when you look at what happened to Georgia last year, after the Auburn game in November, this was a team that was, I mean, in retrospect, it seems so obvious that they were going to bounce back and they were going to beat Auburn on a neutral site and get to the SEC championship. But the fortunes for that team, I think, changed slightly, maybe even more than slightly, when Ben Cleveland was inserted as a starter along the offensive line. He was a redshirt freshman. Would not have been ready to go in September, was ready by late November. What Jeff said about those defensive guys who, you know, have a chance to also step up much the same way. Now, they're true freshmen. Cleveland was a redshirt freshman on offense a year ago. That is the story for me. Georgia's got to get better on defense, especially in the front seven. Generate more pass rush, shut down the running game. It's got to be more effective at the tip of the spear for that defense. And if that happens, it's going to be freshmen that do it. So circle a lot of those names that he mentioned, the Jordan Davises, the Channing Tindalls, the Quay Walkers, Brenton Cox, who's on the field but maybe not, you know, really always flashing. Those guys getting better, those guys dominating stat sheets, that's going to be the way the Georgia defense changes. If it changes for the better, if this becomes truly a playoff contender here again in 2018, if it is truly a threat to Alabama, it's going to be those young guys that get it done. That's going to be a big, big story worth watching. All right, I'm almost used up all my music here for the SEC through, so I guess I better get into this here real quick. I want to show you the AP poll here and some changes in that poll with the SEC teams rising to the top here. Alabama obviously stays at number one. They've been coasting all season long. Schedule about to get tougher for the Crimson Tide. They got to go to LSU in November here, but for now, Alabama's still in that cakewalk here. Look at LSU at number five, though. We briefly mentioned this on the show last week that, you know, almost no one has given LSU a chance to do much of anything. Even when they were undefeated, they were like 50-1 to win the national championship. Teams with losses, like Michigan, for instance, were only at 25-1. So, you know, LSU has always been somewhat overlooked. Now, back in the top five here once again. We said it last week. You know, almost no Georgia fan considered the possibility that maybe Georgia and LSU could rematch in the SEC championship game. But, I mean, at number five, hosting LSU, much like Auburn got a chance to host Alabama a year ago, LSU hosting Alabama, maybe there's some chance that actually gets done. Of course, Georgia falls to number eight in the AP poll. You probably saw that. Then look at Florida at 11, Kentucky at 14. Those are Georgia's next two games after the bye week this Saturday. The Georgia schedule, as you know, tougher now than it appeared to be on paper before the season began. Florida, Kentucky, one of the reasons why they are seemingly tougher opponents is because of the physical toughness they've shown. I am not changing my opinion on Florida. I think offensively they still got some problems. I think overall this is probably not a great team still. But they are certainly more physical than I gave them credit for being. And admittedly, the Florida game next Saturday in Jacksonville is now tougher to win than I would have initially given it credit for. So I will admit that, although I do think it's a day in which Georgia plays a lot better than it played this past Saturday. Now, obviously, the Kentucky game, we've talked about that a little bit. Let me also mention here Texas A&M real quick at 17 in the AP poll ahead of Mississippi State at 22. Jimbo Fisher's doing a pretty good job there. And when you see the implosion happening in Auburn, when you see Gus Malzahn, Auburn fans doubting whether or not they should have ever given him that extension. In fact, most fans move beyond doubt to outright decry that decision. There's even some talk that the university president could lose his job over that. I think the rise of Texas A&M here and the recruiting work that Jimbo Fisher's doing, the fact that, you know, that was a physical game they played at South Carolina. This is a very different A&M team than the one that was led by Kevin Sumlin. Jimbo Fisher is trouble. He is trouble for the rest of the SEC West. And by the way, next year his team also comes into Athens in November. I believe that very easily could be a matchup of top 10 teams in November next year at Sanford Stadium. Jimbo Fisher is building something pretty good there at a Texas A&M. And we will make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, we admitted off the top of the show yesterday that we got a little bit of a challenge here for these first couple days this week. It would be disingenuous if we didn't break down some of what went wrong against LSU, give people a chance to vent the issues here, allow me to vent on behalf of those that don't get a chance to comment. After all, there are a lot of people who listen to the show or watch the show after the fact. They don't get to weigh in with their own comments. They kind of depend on our program to be the voice of the fans a little bit. When fans are disappointed, it's our job to reflect that. We're not going to be wallowing in misery here for the next 2 weeks. We're going to turn the page here to Florida and turn the page to hopefully better stuff here pretty soon. But there is some due diligence that has to be paid for an ugly game by Georgia here. And so we're doing our part to kind of handle some of that. And I think one of the real things that has just bothered so many Georgia fans coming off the game on Saturday was that decision in the first quarter to fake the field goal with Rodrigo Blankenship, taking one of the best kickers in the country, among the best kickers that probably Georgia's ever had, and put him into a situation where he's faking a field goal. And LSU seemingly sniffed it out right away there. And in the stadium, I can tell you that the momentum seemed to flip from one side to the other very quickly. I don't know how much I believe in the momentum as an idea, but if it does exist, it existed on the LSU sideline after the Rodrigo Blankenship faked field goal went awry. And Kirby Smart was asked about it, as you might expect, post-game. And Smart offered a pretty vigorous defense of the decision here, even if the result didn't quite work out. If you missed it, here's what Kirby Smart had to say about that.
We had some good offensive possessions there leading up to it. I thought we were moving the ball good. I felt like at that time we were going to be able to move the ball. We wanted to be aggressive. We came in here and talked to some staff. They were like 15 to 17 with a look that it would work on, and it was a look that we wanted. I mean, we thought it was going to be perfect. They had one guy out there. We were going to block him. One of their guys ended up not rushing. He rushed every other time, and then he fell into the play and made it. So, like you said, if it doesn't work, it was a bad call. I'm the first to admit that. But we certainly felt good about it. We thought it was there. Thought it would be a big momentum play for us. It didn't. But, I mean, I didn't think that was the end of the momentum. It's just that hurt us at the time, certainly.
If you go back and watch the replay of this, and I have done that a few times, as you might imagine, it's amazing here that, you know, Kirby says that, you know, leading up to that moment, LSU in the past had been sending everyone towards a block, had not been covering the outside, and yet Grant Delpit never really did that in the game against Georgia. You almost wonder, did Delpit sniff it out before it happened? Maybe the toss to Blankenship was too high. Maybe that's how he figured it out, that it didn't unfold quick enough or whatever. But you watch Delpit in that moment. I mean, he slides out and gets over, and he's not fooled by this at all. Now, he's also a very fast athlete. He can get over there quickly. But overall, he's just not fooled by that very much. But what it really leads to here is a scenario where coaching in a close game or a game that's likely to be close is just a lot more difficult or a lot different than coaching in a blowout game. In a blowout game against an overmatched opponent, you're just overwhelming that opponent with waves of players, one right after the other. And over the course of time, you wear that opponent down here. But that's not how this works. A close game against an equally matched opponent, it's about strategy and decision making. And in that case, I think Kirby Smart probably privately would admit that maybe that wasn't the best overall decision to make there. Rodrigo Blankenship is among the best kickers in the country. He's probably best used kicking field goals. And if there's a fourth down to be converted, one of the litany of former 4- and 5-star recruits at the skill positions from Georgia, maybe they're one of the guys that should be carrying the ball on a 4th and 9 situation there. But obviously that's an issue that cost Georgia, and hopefully Dog fans hope that's not an issue that affects the team moving forward here. By the way, speaking of moving forward, as Georgia gets ready to move on, it starts thinking about the cocktail party coming up 11 days from right now. It's our Gator Hitter Countdown on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. No matter how bad the LSU game was, we still think it'll be better versus Florida. We'll look forward to talking to you about it and see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.